Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Victoria Volk. Victoria is the author of the book, The Guided Heart, Moving Through Grief and Finding Spiritual Solace. She's also a grief recovery specialist and the host of the Grieving Voices podcast. And as you probably could guess from that description, we're going to be diving into the topic of grief and how you can recover from the grief that you may be dealing with. So welcome to the show, Victoria. I'm glad to have you.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much for share about grief.
Yeah, sure. Not the most fun topic in terms of where people's minds are at when they're going through that, but it's an important topic, and I think your background and your insights will definitely help out some people along the way, definitely the listeners. So speaking of your background, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, who you are?
I've always lived in North Dakota, born and raised, never left. I have traveled some, of course, but and my father passed away when I was 8. I've experienced molestation as a child as well after he passed. I had consequently.
Yeah, there you go.
I can find my words today. Consequently, I had developed a relationship with alcohol as a result in my early 20s of all the grief and trauma, although I didn't recognize it as grief and trauma then, of course. But joined the military and served in Iraq and as a medic. And just my life has been a lot of loss and suffering. And at one point in my life, I thought that that's what life was all about. Like, we're just here to suffer. And I started my personal development journey in 2014 after I had 3 kids in 4 years and kind of had a midlife crisis. At that point, my youngest had started kindergarten and, you know, wrapped my identity. I think my identity had shifted so many times throughout the years. I had a photography business. I would identify myself as a photographer. Then I would identify myself as a service member, right? And then a wife. And then I was a mother and I stayed at home with my kids. I had my business, but I was primarily at home with them. And so when she started kindergarten, it was about the same time where I decided to close my business, which was my 4th baby in a lot of ways. And I was just asking myself these bigger questions, like, what do I want to be when I grow up? Because I felt like I was meant for more. And I knew I wasn't living into my fullest potential. And I didn't know why. I felt quite crazy, really. I would have considered myself a ragey mom. I was just really angry. I was an angry child, although I concealed it really well. I put that anger inward, really, as a lot of child grievers do. Either they will implode or explode. And I was one of the children that would imploded. I cried to myself. I just contained everything. And at some point, we do either implode or explode. And that started to happen when I became a mom, because entrepreneurship and motherhood can bring out the best in you, and they can also bring out your worst. It brings up all your insecurities. And so those were a lot of growing years for me, where I started to be confronted with a lot of the grief that I hadn't addressed. I got a life coach, I bought programs, I was reading books, and just nothing really resonated with me. But I started to do, you know, grief is cumulative and it's cumulatively negative. Like, all these experiences stack up in our lives. And I think that healing is cumulative too. So although I didn't find like this immediate relief I was looking for, all of the things that I was doing was stacking up too, was accumulating and really benefiting me, but not in an overnight, you know, way. It took years. But I had another loss that really opened up a can of worms for me. And I realized I wasn't okay and found grief recovery and the grief recovery method. And it changed my life. It really transformed all of the grief I had been carrying and the anger. It was like this boulder was just removed from my shoulders. And I was a different person coming home from that experience. I went through the same experience I take people through. It's like drinking from a fire hose at sometimes, but it was transformative for me. And everything that I've done and accomplished ever since then has been because I addressed my grief. So becoming a Reiki master and UMAP certified coach, and actually writing the book was actually before grief recovery. If I would write that book now, it would be a very different book. I still think it's helpful to people. It's where I was at that time. But I feel like a lot of it was some spiritual bypassing. I thought I was okay. And I think that's where a lot of people can find themselves. You know, you have this period of time where you feel like you got it all under control, and it just takes one more hit and then you realize, oh, guess not.
Right. Yeah. And that's very true. You know, and I've experienced something similar where, you know, I thought I could just handle, you know, obviously you're going through a grief process, you know, no matter what it is. You know, in my case, it was a loss of a loved one, but you know, when you're going through that, you think, okay, well, yeah, it's hard now, but I'll get through it. I'll get over it. And, you know, and if you leave that unchecked, then eventually you end up in a pretty bad situation. And like you said, you'll either implode or explode, and everyone's situation is going to be a little bit different, but, you know, it's not the direction that you really want to head in. Right. And you mentioned the military. What branch of the military were you in?
Army National Guard.
Okay. Yeah. So I always like to ask that, just to give a little bit of perspective to, you know, who we're talking to and, you know, what their background is. I was in the Army National Guard as well. And, you know, so it gives a little bit of perspective, you know, for people who might be out there who, may have been in similar situations, similar circumstances and stuff. So it's a little bit helpful to have that. So, Let's jump into the topic of grief, right? So let's just start with the basic, right? What's the definition? When we're talking about grief, from my understanding, it could be a lot of different things. What would you just narrow it down to and define what grief really is?
Grief is the loss of hopes, dreams, and expectations. It is anything that you wish would have been different, better, or more, whether it be your relationship or your career or with anything in life. It's reaching out for someone and realizing they're not there. It's a change in familiar pattern of behavior. So let's just say COVID, for example, shook that up for everybody. You know, we didn't have our normal routines. Maybe you drove to the office and on the way you stopped at Starbucks and talked with the barista and, you know, the same person you've talked to maybe three times a week for the past 2 years. And all of a sudden you can't even have a conversation that you always did with that person. I mean, that's a really simple example, but it's all these touch points that we have in our daily lives. We're gone just like that for many of us. And it's those touch points and those interactions with people that really kind of adds to our life and our existence. And, you know, if you're having a bad day and that barista is the one person that just brings you a little sunshine, that's, you look forward to that, right? And then that's gone. And then that, and let's say you live alone. Let's say you're 80 years old and, you know, you go to Arby's every day for lunch. You know, you can't go to Arby's because you can't, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's just all these things that we really take for granted in our daily lives that really is what adds richness to our lives.
So you mentioned the process that you went through of grief recovery. And you know, I when I think about grief, I always think that, you know, everyone has a little bit of a different grieving process for whatever it is, whether it's a loss of a loved one or loss of things like what you're talking about, the those familiar experiences. Everyone handles them a little bit differently, but what is the grief recovery process that you were referring to, and how is it different from maybe other methods of moving beyond grief that people might be a little bit more familiar with?
Well, I'll just use two examples and share the contrast. So you might have a therapist, right? You might go to a therapist and it might be talk therapy. You might have medications involved. But if there's not action, it's just talk therapy. So there's talk therapy and then there's, you know, support groups. But with COVID, you know, a lot of those support groups moved online. They shifted online. Unfortunately, in the social media space, which any rhyme or reason person can join. And again, there's no action in those interactions typically, like in, and even in support groups, it's usually a group of people who are experiencing challenging times in loss, and everyone brings their stuff to this meeting and everyone shares their stuff week after week after week. Where grief recovery is different is, although we still do it in a group setting, which is an option online or in person, there's also a one-on-one option. The difference is that every week you have something you're going to be doing. You're going to be digging into your grief. You're going to be exploring and connecting the dots of the behaviors in your life to your losses. You're going to have awareness around what cycles have been repeating in your life because of loss and trauma, if you've had trauma. And you get a basis of education that you don't get about grief with talk therapy or with, you know, traditional support groups. Meaning you learn about the myths of grief. You learn about why grief is so hard. You learn that grief is not just about death. We learn about how the things and beliefs, the patterns and things that you learned in childhood are simply repeating themselves in adulthood, because we resort to what we know. And when we aren't taught how to process our grief in a healthy way, or how to respond to it in a healthy way, or even to talk about it, which is usually the case, most people don't know how to talk about it. So we don't talk about it. And so that's how people address it, is they put it in a box and they put it on the shelf and they tuck it away. These things repeat into our adulthood. Like, we take those lessons, like, that's a belief about grief. Like, I'm not supposed to talk about it. I'm supposed to tuck it away. And when you become an adult, you respond to your grief the same way, because that's what you know. That's what you've been taught. And so many of us are taught that because we simply don't know better. We aren't taught differently. We aren't given that education about really that grief can really be a teacher. It really is our greatest teacher. And that it doesn't have to be debilitating. It doesn't have to define what you do with your life or how you present yourself in your life, because it changes everything in your life. It affects your money. It affects your relationships, your career, your ability to live into your potential, to really even tap into your own intuition, because you question so much. You question everything. You question your own existence when someone close to you dies. Like, you know, you just do. It's a great clarifier. But if we're keeping ourselves blind to the lessons that are in it, we don't grow from it. And instead we stay stuck in our story and stuck a victim, to be honest, especially if we've been victimized. It's really difficult to reconcile that in our minds, like that I can take responsibility for something that someone else did to me is really hard for people to wrap their heads around. But yeah, grief recovery is about doing just that. It's taking ownership of what is in your life today so that you can change it for tomorrow.
And it sounds like, you know, taking ownership of the things that you can control, the, mm-hmm. the things that are in your the realm of possibility that you have some influence over, yep. And not necessarily dwelling on the things that are out of your control. When you're talking about the loss of a loved one, there's nothing really you can do to change that, to make that that person come back, right? And so, you know, dwelling on that, I wish they were still here. I wish they were still here. That's not going to change anything. It's not going to bring them back. But it sounds like what you're talking about is more like focusing on the future, focusing on what you can control and get a firm grasp on that. Is that kind of in the ballpark?
Yeah, it's identifying how you've responded to grief in the past. Having an awareness of how you responded to grief in the past, or having an awareness of how grief is manifesting in your body, in your life, because it does. We either implode or explode. That's what I meant by that. And then taking ownership of what we want our response to grief to look like for in the future, and learning new tools and information that guide us in doing that. And support. Support's huge.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a firm believer that, after going through my own process that, sometimes that support is necessary. As much as you might think that you can go it on your own and just deal with the situation that's been handed to you, sometimes you do need the support. You need the help from whether it's a spouse or another family member, or even, you know, a professional who can help guide you through the whole process.
I think especially in the military, there is this mentality among soldiers, because, I mean, people who join the military were just built differently. I'll just say that we're built differently. But I think there is this propensity to be strong. And especially if you were a child that grew up in a home where you had to be strong, where that was a message that was like drilled into you, and not intentionally, right? It's children have eyes and ears and listen and perceive and take in information of what they see and hear. And that becomes their story, right? And
yeah.
Whether if you're not told differently or taught differently, you'll make up your own stories as a child, because we were very imaginative children, you know, mm-hmm. we're very imaginative as children. And so those stories become your beliefs. And so when you grow up thinking that you have to be strong, as you see, let's say you, like, for instance, when my dad passed away, now my mother was not, she wore her heart on her sleeve. Like, she let herself be a mess. But in that regard, I had to be strong because I had to hold myself together for her. I did not want to upset her, so I didn't talk about my pain. And so I became like her therapist. I was listening to all her problems and listening to her heartache and all these things. So there was no space or room for me to share mine. Now, again, I'm not like poo-pooing my mother. This is what she knew, right? This is how she responded to her grief. But this is why I'm saying, this is why this cycle is so important to break, because I found myself repeating these same things with my kids, but it was coming out as anger. Like, my anger was coming out. So we project, you know, all that stuff from the past that's unaddressed onto anybody, especially children, because they bring up that stuff for us, you know, we project that onto our kids. And so that cycle continues. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm so passionate about grief recovery, because it breaks the cycle. Because once you know better, you do better. And so this, one of the myths of grief is to be strong. And what does that even mean? Like, how do you even do that? Like, oh, and like when people and society just society drills it home. Like, you're so, they tell people this, like, you know, you're not falling apart. So you're so strong, right. You know, you're keeping it together. You're so strong. I've never seen someone so strong, but what does that mean? We're not robots. We are feeling human beings. And so you can either be strong or you can be human. But if you're not allowing yourself to feel, is that really being human? Is that really living the grief experience? Is that really letting yourself feel? Is that authentically being strong?
No, and that's a good point that you bring up, because I think when you have someone who, especially like you said in the military, like that's just ingrained in you to just be strong, you know, quote unquote, be strong and, you know, be this, you know, this tough guy or tough gal or whatever. And, you know, you compartmentalize, you put certain things in a box, you put it on the shelf and you try to forget about it, but
drive on, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you can't, you have to deal with some of those things. You especially big things, you know, you need to address them. And even the little things, eventually they're going to pile up and they're going to become a big thing, mm-hmm. if not addressed too. So, you know, this whole idea of being strong, I like what you said there. Like, what does that even mean to be strong? You know, I know in a physical sense, you know, someone, you go into, walk into a gym and you see someone, you know, bench pressing, you could tell whether or not they're strong just by looking at how much weight they're mm-hmm. moving. Right. But from a grief standpoint, what does that mean? What does that look like? You know, is there a certain amount of grief that if you handle this on your own, you're strong? Like that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I admire your ability to not cry and to show me that, you know, give me this sense of false feeling of control. And
right.
There's nothing honorable in that.
No,
there's nothing honorable. You're dishonoring your own grief by doing that.
Right. And quite frankly, it's like you said, it's not human. It's not a human response to just not feel any emotion and just stuff that all down. That's not, not a healthy way to manage it. So
but what happens though, when we allow ourselves to fall apart in front of someone who then gets uncomfortable? Right. So I think that is also how society just is these subliminal messages of, I want to ask you how you are, but I really don't want to know the truth because then I'll be uncomfortable with what you say. Cause I'm uncomfortable with my own grief. So here, let me hand you a tissue. Stop your crying. Right. This is the things that we do. Let me give you a hug, but I'm going to pull away when it gets too close. Like when it gets too long, I'm going to pull away. Right.
Yeah.
We cannot sit with people in their grief if we haven't been giving ourselves the time and space to sit in our own. So this is how these patterns and these societal beliefs get just ingrained, just weaved into every parts of in our lives. Like it drills the message home. Nope, I gotta be strong. All the lessons that you've learned in childhood, it's just society just like, yep, reaffirms it.
Right. And that's a good point that you made as far as trying not to make other people uncomfortable. And that's why maybe some people just, you know, bury their emotions or however they deal with it without trying to make other people uncomfortable. I could think of, you know, a number of different scenarios where people are doing that just because they want to spare someone else's feelings, or they just don't want it to become an uncomfortable situation. So, okay, let's just not talk about that. But like you were saying earlier, talking about it is what helps, talking about the, whatever the thing that you're grieving is ultimately going to help. It's going to help you. But it may also help the other person too. That's in that situation. So it's kind of a necessary evil. You might just need to get uncomfortable.
And I think a lot of it is because so many of us grow up in these same beliefs, and this is why people say unhelpful or hurtful things without really intentionally wanting to do that. But that's where it's so important that we surround ourselves with people who can be that person, that heart with ears for us, who won't criticize, analyze, or judge what we share. And again, you can only sit with others in their grief to the extent that you've sat in your own. And I just think it's so important that you surround yourself with people that are going to help you move the needle forward, that aren't going to allow you to stay stuck in your story, and to help you really develop an awareness around what you want your life to be and taking action to do so. And it doesn't have to be someone that's 10 years out from their loss. It could be someone that's 3 years out from their loss or a year out from their loss, but they've taken a lot of action in that time. So time is, that's another thing. When I say to you, time heals all wounds, everybody knows it. Like, that is such a myth too. Time just passes. It does nothing. Time just passes. It's what you do in that time that matters.
Yeah. And I think from my own experience, I think all time has really done is just gotten me more used to not having that person around in my life. It doesn't make it better. It's not like I'm, oh yeah, this is okay now. I'm happy about this. Like, mm-hmm. Obviously that's not the case. But I've just kind of gotten used to it. It's kind of like, if you put on an itchy sweater, and the first day that you're wearing it, it's itchy and it's uncomfortable. But if you wear that same itchy sweater for days and days and days and weeks and months and years, eventually you just get used to it, and it's there. You may not like it, but you've gotten used to it. And so I think that's like the only benefit of time is you sort of just get used to it, but it doesn't make it better. Mm-hmm. It's just different, I guess.
Yeah, different. You evolve with it, right?
Right.
Our grief changes over, especially I can say that as a kid, like as the different stages and phases of my life, my grief changed with me. Mm-hmm. It didn't get better. No. I mean, that's the perfect example. Like, and then you'll have people say, well, it's been over 30 years, you should be over it by now. Or it's 13 years, or it's 3 years, you should be over it by now. That's hurtful and it's harmful. And don't say that, people.
Yeah. And especially for people who are, military spouses who have lost their husband or their wife in combat or whatever. A couple of years down the line, it's like, well, you should be over him by now or her by now and move on with your life. Well, it may not be that simple to just move on.
Well, and especially in the military where there's many young widows, yeah. Well, you can get married again. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get married again. I want to be with my husband. He should be here today. You know what I mean? So that's right. Again, like another one of those, don't say that, people. Say that. That's hurtful.
And they know that they could get married again. Like that's
right.
That's obviously something.
Thanks, Captain Obvious.
Right, exactly. We all know this. We all know. Oh yeah, I can do that. It's not like this far flung concept that they've never thought of before. They obviously know this, but they might just not be you're ready for that, you know, and some people might be, and that's fine too. I think, you know, they might get to a point where they are okay with moving on and, you know, finding somebody else and possibly even getting remarried and everything. And that's fine. But if someone isn't doing it, it's probably for a reason. They're probably not ready for it, you know?
Well, and I think there is, to circle back to that point, there can be a lot of judgment by people when you do move on, right? There sure. can be, I mean, that's grief too. I mean, especially if there's children involved and there's grandparents and the parents of the, you know, the spouse that passed away, and mm-hmm. all those dynamics of those relationships change and shift when there's a new relationship. And so there's a lot more grief to be had in all yeah. of that.
And there, it goes back to the original point that, or maybe not original, but one of the earlier points that you were making about, you know, making other people uncomfortable, right? And if you're dealing with, maybe your in-laws, you know, who are grieving the loss of their son or daughter or whatever the case may be. And, you're obviously grieving the loss of your spouse, and, then you're worried, okay, what are they going to think of me when I move on and find somebody else? And you know, that's a pretty uncomfortable conversation, I have to imagine, that anyone would have, you know, whether it's a military related death or not. It's just kind of an uncomfortable conversation. You know, people obviously do move on at some point, but not everyone does. And so, you know, it's probably a pretty difficult thing to have that kind of conversation. So, yeah, I mean, I think the theme of this is kind of getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, you know, just kind of rip the Band-Aid off and talk about things with each other and actually do something and face the uncomfortable situation head on, right?
And to go a little deeper on the whole, like, remarrying thing and moving on, one of the other myths of grief is replace the loss. And that is sometimes what people do. They haven't addressed the loss of that relationship, and so they do replace. They're trying to replace. And it's not replacing the person. Obviously, that's not an option, but you're fulfilling a hole that is gaping, right? It's a gaping yeah. wound. And so you are looking to replace what is missing. And often the first example of this that we learn is in our childhood, when we have a pet that dies and our parents say, "Oh, don't worry, we can get another dog. We'll get another dog." And they do. You get another right. dog. 2 weeks later, you're at the pet store. Here's your replacement dog.
Right.
Not even ever addressing a missed opportunity there to talk about that first loss. And if you have a child who that was their, like, really only friend, you know, if they felt awkward, you know, a lot of children feel awkward. They don't know how to socialize. They struggle in creating relationships and connections with people. It's much easier to create a connection with an animal. So for a lot of children, their animal is their best friend.
Yeah.
Their best friend just died. If that was a human, it'd be a different story. Like, you'd probably think of it a little bit more and maybe actually have some conversations, albeit not probably to the extent that I would in the work that I do, but you would at least have a conversation, right? And here it's just totally dismissing, because pet loss and miscarriage are two of the most minimized losses. But for some people, they are the most devastating. And I think of soldiers who have, you know, service animals, or canine officers who lose their canine dog. I mean, you can't tell me that those relationships, that there's a bond there that you can't replace that bond. So
no, and I'm actually glad that you brought that point up with children and animals and stuff, because our family lost our dog back in 2020 over the summer. And this dog, my wife and I got her shortly after we got married, so before we had any kids. And she had been a part of my kids' life their entire life, up until the day that she passed. And just seeing the heartbreak on my kids' when we broke the news to them and told them, and just seeing how sad they were over losing this dog, we knew that it wasn't something that we could just jump into getting another dog. Next week we're going to go get another dog. We did eventually, get another dog, in our house, but it was just a month ago or so. we gave the kids time to grieve, and we talked about it with them. They still are, even with the new dog in the house. We actually have two dogs now. We kind of joke that they have big paws to fill. even with that, they still talk about how they miss the first dog, and it's true. You can't just replace the loss like that, and that's not at all what we were trying to do. It's just the way we are in our house. We just love dogs, and it just didn't feel like our home was complete without having a dog around. So we ended up getting a dog, but we wanted to make sure that we gave the kids and us enough time to kind of grieve over the loss of not having her around, because she was around for almost 12 years, and that's a big chunk of your life, So, and especially for my kids, she was around for 100% of their life up until that point. So, you're right. It is a big loss.
I think it makes in my personal life, my husband isn't as fond as I am of our dog. Like I had to convince him. Part of my youngest going to kindergarten was that I needed to replace that loss. So I know replace the loss very well. And I replaced her with a dog. So, I had three kids, but my youngest going to kindergarten, like I needed something then to preoccupy myself. Like, so I convinced my husband that I needed a dog to, fill this hole like that I was feeling. Like I suddenly wasn't going to be needed as much. Right. They were growing up, and I felt like this gap of distance was just getting bigger and bigger. Right. And in my own head, not that it was actually true, but the stories that we tell ourselves.
Sure. We could be our own worst enemy at some times, right?
Yeah. And so he's still in our life, and he's an amazing dog. I trained him well, and he's just fits in perfectly. And I mean, I did research, like how to choose a dog. Like I did all kinds of research. Like this was going to be the best dog ever. Made it a mission. Right. But he'll joke about how, Gizmo, why don't you go play in the road? Or he'll make comments like that. And so it is this running joke. It is a running joke in our house. But I can't, but it'll be very interesting to see that when the day comes and our Gizmo passes away, how he will respond. Because I said, there's no way you can look at our children and laugh or joke, right, about them losing like the biggest thing that was a part of their lives, right? Yeah. So, but he also hasn't experienced a lot of loss either. And so I'm finding it interesting in the conversations I have with people. And for my podcast, Grieving Voices, it's usually obviously people that have had loss, usually lots of it. But my husband is a different cat in that he hasn't had a lot of deep loss. He's had losses, but nothing that felt profoundly difficult or challenging for him. And so I think that's where people respond differently to loss. It depends on your life experience. And he's had other loss, like experiences, like career-wise, regrets, or I wish I'd have done this, or if I'd only done that, those types of grief. But it's very different when you lose a parent as a child, right? Or experience trauma, or Yeah. It builds you differently.
Yeah, it sure does. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Going back, you kind of mentioned like a career loss or mm-hmm. grieving that kind of maybe a transition. And one of the things I wanted to mention is because a lot of people don't think of transitioning out of the military as something that they would end up grieving. They don't think of it in that terms. I think mm-hmm. The word grief tends to be associated more with things like death and things like that. But when you get out of the military, unless you are just like completely fed up with the military and you hated your time in the service and everything like that, but when they get out of the military, they had this identity as a soldier, as a sailor, as a Marine, airman, whatever branch that they served in. They had this identity, and then they take the uniform off for the last time, and they're now out in the civilian world, and they lose that identity. They may not realize it at the time, but they're sort of grieving the loss of that identity. What are some things that people can do? And I know you said that you don't necessarily want to replace a loss with something else, but are there ways that people can transition from military to civilian life and grieve that loss appropriately and be able to manage it and move on? I don't want to say move on, but to be able to continue on with their life without letting that weigh them down.
I think you have to take stock of what you're actually losing. Because it can be really difficult. Well, how does this experience translate to civilian life? Not to use my husband as an example again, but I will. He wishes you would have gone full time. I kind of do too. But he had done 2 years active duty back to back. So 2 years of active duty, and then decided not to re-enlist. That's something he kicks himself over. Because he felt something when he wore the uniform. And when you don't have that anymore, like that sense of belonging, I'm not putting words in his mouth, but this is what I recognize a soldier would feel, because as a soldier myself, but you have a sense of belonging. There's that camaraderie, right, in the military that you don't necessarily get unless you're like a police officer or firefighter, that service connected community service type career, that's bigger than yourself, right? Like the military is, it's bigger than you. So you have these things that you might not have anymore. Because when you are no longer in the military, yes, you might still be keep in touch with, comrades and things like that. But if they're still in and you're not, that changes the dynamics, the relationships might change. You might actually fall away. The relationships might fall away. Well, that's even more grief. Even in the case of a spouse dying or, shifting the, leadership, like if you change leadership, like that, like dynamics of relationships just change. And so I think it's really just taking stock of what you are all losing and what that grief feels like and finding the support to help you transition. Like, where do I go from here? How can I relate these skills and this experience that I've gained into the civilian life to serve, to continue to be of service to others? Cause I think that's really what it's about too, is you don't feel like what's your purpose now? You're missing a purpose. And for a lot of people too, especially with the military, I think I don't know the statistics, but I think the military is a draw for a lot of people who come from broken homes, who didn't have a lot of stability in their lives, who didn't really know what they wanted to do with their lives. And so they join the military either to escape something or to find belonging. But if you've experienced grief and trauma as a child and you bring that experience to the military, And, you know, we're trained. What are we trained to do? Shoot to kill, right? You're trained. You're, I mean, it's do or die in situations. I've often, actually, I went to a VA mental health summit. This was pre-COVID. And I had a booth there and I talked to one of the psychiatrists for the VA. And I said to her, why do they not do the ACE study as a screening for the military? And she was like, do you know what the ACE study is?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I've heard of it, but I'm not 100% sure. And I'm sure there's some people maybe who are listening who might not know what it is. So if you could just fill us in on what that is, that would be great.
Yep. The ACE study is adverse childhood experiences. Okay. And the more ACEs that you've experienced in your childhood, the more likely they've connected that you're more likely to have like certain medical conditions, mental illness, depression, anxiety, like all these different PTSD, like you're more likely to experience these types of things later in life. It is a study. It is proven. Like this is not hogwash. And so I feel like that would be a very good screening, because when you put someone who's experienced grief and trauma in childhood and you put them in a war zone multiple times, I mean, then they're supposed to transition out and go back to like life as normal. I mean, we can't, I mean, that's not going to happen.
Good luck with that, right?
Right. So that's where transitions can be the make or break of someone's life. Mm-hmm. And so the more support that you can have and put around you, the better, because I think that's where a lot of people start to really, that's when the depression does settle in. That's when the anxiety does settle in. That's, well, what now? What do I do with my life now? I have no purpose. You're asking yourselves those bigger questions. It's a grief, right? So you're asking yourself those big questions. Like, what do I want to do with the rest of my life?
Sure.
Who wants me? The military, like, I'm done now. I'm damaged goods, you know? You know, right. I mean, that's how a lot of soldiers can feel depending on their experience. And so a lot of them, they're just looking for a second chance at life. And so just support, I think, is the biggest thing.
Yeah, and I think finding that sense of purpose and camaraderie that you might be missing is important too. To have the camaraderie, the people that you can talk to that maybe share some of your experiences that might be important. And there's there are organizations out there that you can join, that, you know, veteran organizations like a VFW or American Legion type thing. And I know they kind of have a stigma with them as being kind of like an old man's club kind of thing, right? But they have a lot of younger you know, post 9/11 veterans joining their ranks as well. So it's not like your grandpa's drinking club that he, you know, goes down to. So, you know, the things like that are probably a good place to go for, you know, getting some of that camaraderie, you know, but potentially.
And actually, I wouldn't even dismiss that as, I mean, that's something to lean into, because people, though, like generation Vietnam, like, okay, Vietnam, apples and oranges, right? To right. Iraq and Afghanistan. Like that was very different. Like you can't even compare. So I think lean into the wisdom that they have.
Sure.
And honestly, it will probably be very therapeutic for them too.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. To be able to share stories and share perspectives and share the different experiences. There's an opportunity there. Old dogs can teach new tricks too, you know.
Right.
It's untapped wisdom, I think. And that's also grief too for a lot of those old dogs, right? That feel like, well, that was my, I guess I, you know, where do they feel their purpose? I think we miss an opportunity to allow people of the older generation to share their wisdom and their perspective, because then they feel purpose in doing that too. It makes them feel good. So when you don't, when you close yourself off from that experience, you're actually closing opportunity off for someone else to feel good. Think of it that way, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think when we look at it that way, we're now not thinking about it like what's in it for me, right? Mm-hmm. With the military, there's that selfless service, right? That aspect of it, and so we're not looking at the military as what's in it for me. We're looking at it like, you know, okay, we're here to serve our country, our community, or you know, whatever it is, we're here to serve, and we're here to serve others, quite frankly. And with this mindset, you're now looking at how can I help other people maybe share their knowledge, their wisdom, their experiences, because they've just by nature of time, they've had more of them than we have, right? The younger generation. Yeah,
that too. So, that's another good point. But you know, like the veterans, Vietnam veterans, they weren't welcomed home.
Right.
Like we have support today. Soldiers today have support that did not exist in this, you know, back in the 60s, 70s. So I just think there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, for sure. There's a big opportunity. And I think maybe more of the younger generation should take advantage of that opportunity. And I would imagine that would help the grieving process a little bit, mm-hmm. As they're transitioning back into the civilian world. Before we wrap up today, I mentioned your book earlier on, and you had mentioned a little bit about it as well, but I want to give you a chance to tell people kind of what it's about and where people can go to get it, but also where people can go to get in touch with you to see if they can work with you as far as the grief recovery process.
Yeah, so my book, I self-published it in 2017, and I mentioned that if I wrote it today, it'd be a very different book, but it's where I was at the time. Mm-hmm. And it's really just things that was helping me at that time and things that I was learning about myself and my own grief. It's on Amazon. There's a link on my website, theunleashedheart.com has my links for everything. My podcast, Grieving Voices. And I do have a program called Do Grief Differently. And it is grief recovery as well as another program. They're kind of two programs in one. It's called, I'm a certified UMAP coach. So kind of coming back to service members transitioning out, what UMAP does is it lets you identifies your top five strengths and your top 10 values and how you're wired and your skills. And we translate that into, we can actually see where your military experience can translate into the civilian side. And so that is another offering. I can do that just separately as just UMAP as well. But what I found in working with grievers is that grief recovery kind of took care of what was, but then it didn't answer what now. And that's really what UMAP does, because once you can articulate what you bring to the table and what your gifts are and what you have to give to the world, it builds confidence. You have the language. And you actually, like, it was affirming for me. Like, I am doing exactly what I'm meant to do. Like, empathy is my top strength. I also have connectedness and strategic and input. And, but it's, all of it is called a UMAP, and it really can be a guide for people in a path forward. And so that's what I found was the missing piece in the grief work that I was doing. And so that's why I combined the two, and now together they're called Do Grief Differently. And it's a 12-week program where I work one-on-one with people.
Sounds like a great program and a great way for people to start recovering from their grief and getting, better outcomes. Mm-hmm. And I will have links to all of this in the show notes. I'll have links to your book, your website, and everything else. I'll even put social media links and things like that in there as well. So anyone who's looking to get in touch with you to learn more about what you do, check out the show notes, and we'll have all of that there. And again, thank you very much for joining me, for sharing your experiences, and helping out. I think helping out the listeners with who might be dealing with their own set of grief to know that it's okay to talk to people. It's okay to have some of those maybe uncomfortable conversations. So it's been a pleasure hearing your side of things, and it's been sort of refreshing too to know that it's okay to talk about these things.
It's normal and natural. Grief is normal and natural. There's nothing wrong with you, or nothing that needs to be fixed.
Right. It's just a process that you are going through at this point. So thank you again. I really do appreciate you coming on and sharing with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.